As I write, Tony Blair is telling the British Parliament that his proposed changes to detention legislation are not an attack on human rights or turning Britain into a police state. Seems that he and Howard and Bush are all, as they say, singing from the same song sheet. In a couple of weeks, we'll hear on the radio and TV the sounds of kids singing 'Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. Why is it the season to be jolly? Why is it that our so-called leaders fail to recognise the destruction they are wreaking on our way of life? Why is it that we as a community seem to be allowing them to take away what was so hard fought for and for which we take a minute's silence this time each year? 87 years ago, the first Armistice Day was observed here and in other Allied countries as citizens took a silent moment to listen to the now quiet voices of the slaughtered who they were told provided us with liberty, freedom and hope for the future. The end of the war to end all wars saw 10 million human lives erased and tens of millions more forever suffering the scars of physical and psychological trauma. It's hard to imagine what it was like in Australia at the end of World War I. However, in raw figures, it is not inaccurate to say that we paid a higher sacrifice per head of population than any other Allied nation. From a population of about 5 million, approximately 300,000 young men served between 1914 and 1918. If we take away from the population figures all those who were not eligible to serve, women, children, older men, and of course Indigenous Australians, who weren't even counted, we find that of the total available cohort of eligible men, 1 in 2 served. Of the 300,000, about 60,000 were killed either on the battlefield or died from their wounds while under military care. That means 1 in 10 of all Australian men were killed, and of the total number, over a quarter were wounded. The odds of being killed were 1 in 5. The odds of being wounded on the battlefield were 1 in 2. 87 years later, we should be hearing about the reality of war and why it was supposedly fought. Instead, we get lectures on how we should just accept the imposition of the conditions our grandfathers supposedly fought to liberate people from. World War I historian C.E.W. Bean describes the way Australian soldiers were killed on a battlefield in this fight for liberty. He wrote, quote, "They are simply turned in there as into some ghastly giant mincing machine," unquote. Unlike his colleagues today, Bean was attempting to be dispassionate and tell it like it was. No embedding, no cozying up to the majors, generals and politicians. He leaves them no room to describe their barbaric decisions and the resulting deaths as somehow heroic. I'm yet to hear one of today's military directors or their political masters or any mainstream journalist describe, as British poet John Mansfield did, a battle scene in which, quote, "there was a cat eating a man's brain. They were shoveling parts of men into blankets," unquote. Sure, we hear reports and see pictures of dead people, but we don't see the dying, unless we go to the movies. We don't hear the hours of groaning and crying and screaming as men, women or children die with their guts strewn about them. We don't see the images or hear the sounds of the soldiers dying in their Humvees after an IED rips it apart. We don't see journalistic poetry that allows for a real humanity and helps us to understand the futility of war. Yet we are supposed to believe the empty rhetoric of our so-called leaders who express their sympathy for the victims of war. The dead and wounded are not victims of some inevitable outcome. They are dead, dying or wounded because of the direct, conscious decisions taken by ideologues who decree a war should begin. Poet-soldier Siegfried Sassoon was renowned for his wont to wander off into the battlefield on his own, no embedding in the trenches of the Somme. He wrote of his disillusionment of the war commanders in this way. Good morning," the general said, when we met him last week on our way to the line. "Now the soldiers Owen smiled at are most of them dead, and we're cursing his staff for incompetent swine." Sassoon also wrote of the suicide of soldiers who, faced with death at the hand of their enemy or out of sheer desperate fear, turned on its head any notion of the brave patriot fighting for king and country. Robert Fisk describes similar scenes in brutal detail from his experience on the front lines of modern battlefields around the world. None of them are romantic or glorious places to be. Today we find stage-managed events taking place and broadcast not as what they truly are, propaganda, but as if they are reality. We find when threats fail to alarm us sufficiently, the guns and dogs and helicopters come out and the carnage is brought to our neighbourhoods and streets. Perhaps it is time that we adopted the line from Sassoon, who wrote that he would not return to the French theatre because, quote, "I can no longer be a party to prolonging these sufferings," unquote. Sassoon and the poet-journalist soldiers of his day were far more engaged and observant of what was happening around them than the weak and snivelling media we have today. Sassoon and his contemporaries wrote what they saw and had no need to resort to propaganda or deception. Perhaps our good-looking news anchors in their pancake makeup, along with their never-ending stream of experts and reporters who've dismally failed to report the effects of this current war both here and abroad on those who are caught up in it, would do to take a moment to reflect on the life and words of Edward Thomas. Thomas was a young poet who decided to enlist in the British Army. He was married with two young children when he decided to volunteer. He wrote of his decision, quote, "Above all, I am not concerned with poetry. My subject is war and the pity of war. The poetry is in the pity," unquote. As we know, the war is still not over. The lies, broadcast around the world and unchallenged in any substantial way by the corporate and mainstream media, prevail. These lies now tell us that we need to be subdued. We need to be put in our place like so many unruly children. We are told we need to have our civil and human rights taken away from us so that we can be a better society. We are told endlessly that the war on terror must continue. But for what? For what? Perhaps we need to take some time during the minute's silence to reflect on our part in attempting to stop wars, wherever they may be. Perhaps we should take the time to read the history our so-called political leaders ignore and remind ourselves of the pain felt by our grandparents as they found out about the death of their mates and loved ones. Perhaps we should remember their roomy old eyes and the way they spoke about their battles for our freedom. Only if we acquaint ourselves with the lessons of history will we be able to better prepare for a humane, just, lasting, and peaceful future. Those who fail to take note of history, it is often said, are bound to repeat it. I'm Shane Elson. This is the Public First program.